Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Sowing the seeds of cannabis and sounding the praise of our favorite plant, it's time to Hemp Present. Our radio resident Hempo Sapien, Vivian McPeak, will present a weekly platform for guests and listeners to Hemp Present about hemp and cannabis from the legal, activist, and reformist route. Let's round up and roll it up for our headmaster of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
Welcome, my friends. I am Vivian McPeak, and this is the Hemp Present Resistance. I am the executive director of the world's largest annual cannabis policy reform event, the Seattle Hemp Fest. Speaking flower to power for 29 years and founded hempfest.org. I am also the author of the book Protestival, a 20-year retrospective of Seattle Hemp Fest, also founded hempfest.org. This show is a weekly read for Radio Rebellion, where I speak with some of the principal risk takers, movers and shakers, and history makers of the cannabis industry, culture, and reform movement. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Reverend Sharp has been engaged in faith-based social justice advocacy with organizations in Illinois for over 20 years. He was the founding executive director of Protestants for the Common Good, which he led from 1996 through 2012, and acting executive director of the Community Renewal Society after the organizations merged in 2012. In both positions, he helped to pass medical marijuana reforms in Illinois. Reverend Sharp graduated from the Woodrow Wilson School, Princeton University, with a Master's of Public Affairs in 1969, and received his Master of Divinity degree from the Divinity School of University of Chicago in 1996. He was ordained in the United Church of Christ in January 2007, and he's been kind enough to join me today. Welcome, Reverend Sharp, to Cannabis Radio.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
My pleasure. Let's begin with why you have dedicated so much of your own focus and energy to reforming America's drug laws. In your eyes, what's wrong with our country's current drug laws in general?
So many things. The first thing to say is that it's racist, deeply racist in origin. That doesn't mean that everybody who views themselves as involved in drug policy, even those who would say are putting forward the war on drugs, are racist. But it does mean that the origins are there and it infuses the entire war itself. What's wrong with it, other than that, which is pretty fundamental, is first of all, the fact that it's failed. We spent over $1 trillion and drug use has not been reduced. And the way I like to talk about it is to ask people to think about a religious concept called the just war. Augustine set forth principles of what would be considered a just war many, many years ago. And the war on drugs today fails on almost all of those principles. A just war has to have a just cause. There is no just cause for the war on drugs when you look at the fact that, in my view, it's immoral to arrest people and treat them as criminals simply for drug use and drug possession. You have to have a legitimate authority to fight a just war, especially when it comes to marijuana. There's not a legitimate authority. The 60-70% of the public in this country would legalize marijuana if they have the opportunity, as we now have in 11 states. A just war should be fought only as a last resort. The war on drugs is by no means the last resort to dealing with drug policy. The last resort should be treatment, not punishment. And the war on drugs gets that absolutely reversed. A just war spares non-combatants. All you have to do is look at the cop shows on TV or SWAT teams that burst into houses. Got folks that are hurt that don't need to be. And you look at children of incarcerated parents, folks who are in prison for nonviolent drug use, you're certainly not sparing the non-combatants. The likelihood of success, you fight a just war only if you think there's the likelihood of success. And in fact, the war on drugs is a continuing failure. Drug use has not been reduced. Prices have not been increased, which they would be if you were limiting drug supply, and we're spending countless millions of dollars to no real effect.
You spearheaded Clergy for a New Drug Policy 5 years ago. I'm just curious, were there any specific experiences or moments that motivated you to expand from worship and witnessing to target drug policy? Was there a catalyst that inspired you to take these issues on?
Yeah, there's a very clear line that, looking back, really was at work. With the group you mentioned in the introduction, Protestants for the Common Good, one of our agenda items was the whole question of reentry and what happens to people when they're in prison and they come out. The idea that you pay your debt to society in this country by going to prison is one of our great American myths. There is really very little second chance when you go into prison. So we were looking for ways to help people with reentry, and went down to Springfield, our state capital, and began to take a closer look at who is in prison. We found that so many people who were in prison shouldn't be there. They were there for nonviolent, low-level drug offenses. And once we realized that, we began to say, hey, we got to take a look at why so many people are in prison who shouldn't be there, especially given the racial origins of the war on drugs and the discriminatory drug law enforcement. And that made us realize we had a much larger problem with reentry. We had a problem of who was going to prison in the first instance.
You've said that drug reform is, quote, absolutely a Christian issue involving compassion, mercy, and forgiveness. Al, there's no shortage of conservative churches, religious leaders in America that generally support drug prohibition, characterizing drug use as some sort of moral or character failure. I'm just curious if you've had any kind of reaction in terms of pushback from the religious community or any opposition in your own congregation or outside sources?
Yeah, first of all, in terms of my own congregation, I have not been a pastor of an individual congregation. My entire work has been advocacy, working with individuals in congregations, but not as the pastor of a single congregation. So, in fact, what that does is give me a very good overview of the religious community, which has to be seen as much broader than, quote, just the religious community. Of course, there's pushback, but let's start with the notion that there are many diverse communities that I've worked with and that we all should care about. And if you take, for example, at one end of the spectrum, Unitarian Universalists, they published a statement of conscience in 2002 that could be the entire agenda for Clergy for a New Drug Policy from the days that we started it to today. They realized that the war on drugs was misguided, that the issue was treatment and caring, not punishment. They anticipated the whole notion of harm reduction rather than abstinence only. They realized that, for example, clean needles should be an alternative provided to anyone who was using drugs rather than simply arresting people for drug use. So I would start with them as one end of the spectrum. Then you look at the mainline congregations. Many will say that they don't ban alcohol use. they're a little bit muffled on what ought to happen with drugs other than alcohol. Presbyterians had a report about 2 or 3 years ago called Health Not Punishment as a response to drug use. They called for the decriminalization, although sadly not the full legalization of marijuana. But then, of course, you get to the evangelicals who, or Catholics, who for different reasons, I think, both say all drug use is bad. In the case of Catholics, and I've debated a couple of bishops in different states around the country in my travels, they simply say the Pope says all drug use is bad, therefore marijuana is bad and all drug use is bad. And they say that based on notions of natural law, which I don't fully understand, and I would leave it to a literate Catholic to explain more fully than I can. Evangelicals are against any drug use. I think, and again, they should speak for themselves, but my understanding is that they think primarily in terms of personal salvation. Their orientation is less social justice and what we do for society as a whole than it is for finding the card of passage into personal salvation. And they have a pretty clear sense of what literal sins are, which depend very strongly on a literal reading of the Bible. And you can find anything you want in the Bible if you choose to proof text it. They proof text it to say that all drug use is bad. So there's a lot of pushback. I don't, now that's over characterizing some evangelicals, but I think those generalizations are useful. So we have to talk about the broader religious community, and the pushback certainly comes mostly from evangelicals and from Catholics. The problem with mainline Protestants is not so much pushback as silence, which means that they stigmatize people who are struggling with addiction, and that's very destructive, and I want to change that.
We have a little over a minute until the first break. Kind of continuing what you're just saying, are there specific Bible references? Is the Bible saying anything about intoxicants and drug use? Are there references?
The operative concept is proof texting. We need to read the Bible for its broad themes of love and justice and the covenant of God with the human community through history. But you can find almost justification for almost anything you want to do by picking two or three particular texts in the Bible. Certainly that's what evangelicals do when they talk about sexual orientation, LGBTQ communities. Even though there are only two or three passages, they base an entire stance on that. You can find concerning drug use, it speaks mostly to alcohol, and there are certainly passages that speak about the dangers of drunkenness, intoxication. But let us start with the notion that Jesus turned water into wine. So what are you going to do with that? People talked about Jesus as a glutton and a drunkard. What are you going to do with that? That's what I mean when I say that you can find almost, and you can find statements in the Psalms and in Proverbs about wine gladdening the heart. So it's very dangerous to use the Bible for any particular narrow purposes without doing so in the context of God as love and the broader themes of the Bible.
My guest is the Reverend Alexander Sharp. We're going to take our first break and come right back with more questions for Reverend Sharp.
Time to roll out for the people that let us Hemp Present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoogies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
Plant Profits.
I'm Vern Davis, and I'd like to introduce you to some of the most forward-thinking executives and companies in the cannabis industry. We call them the Plant Profits. Each week on Plant Profits, we talk to the people at the forefront of the industry, creating real companies and career opportunities. where learn from the people leading the charge into the promised land of profit. Plant Profits is powered by Produce Global, people solutions firm that has been building companies, changing lives since 1995. ProtisGlobal.com. Produce Global. Find Plant Profits now at CannabisRadio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
And I'm back with the Reverend Al Sharp from Clergy for a New Drug Policy. Any pushback in any direct cannabis connections to any pushback you've had?
Yeah, as I said, the audience that I'm trying to reach is I work to legalize cannabis or medical marijuana in the various states, depending on where they are, in either of those two, is mainline Protestants. Evangelicals aren't going to change easily, and nor are Catholics. But for the mainline Protestants, you know, the denominations that you think of from, you know, Methodist, Episcopalian, Lutheran, Presbyterian, I'm sure I'm leaving someone out, United of My Own, the United Church of Christ. What happens is that individual clergy are very responsive to the notion of legalizing marijuana. The only constraint, and that's not surprising, 60 to 70% of the public in all of the states I've been, and I've been in 10 or 11 or 12 now throughout the country, do support that. But they are concerned, understandably, about the fact that even if, you know, 60% or 70% of the public support legalizing marijuana, that leaves, you know, 30 to 35% in their congregations who don't, and they don't need a battle on this, unless they absolutely feel they have to have one. And so what I suggest and what they're quite prepared to do is to allow me to use their title, their name, and their personal address, and then they will sign a petition. In some cases, they'll testify, and we get a great deal of support. I should also say that when it comes to medical marijuana, which is now, as I'm sure you know, legal in 33 or 34 states, clergy are overwhelmingly, is not too strong a word to say that they support that. It's happening in blue states, of course. It's happening in red states. One of the red states that surprised me 2 years ago was Oklahoma, which legalized medical marijuana with a very strong majority. Had the coronavirus not hampered travel, I would be in Nebraska as we speak, working with clergy in Nebraska to place medical marijuana on the ballot. So clergy are supportive of medical, and as individuals, very supportive of legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, my organization, we did an event in Oklahoma a couple of years ago with former Senator Connie Johnson, and I was really surprised.
Oh, yes, I have spoken with her.
Yeah, yep. And yeah, she's great, and I was really surprised to see the huge reception that we had. I imagine that, I think it seems to me like the issue of medical marijuana has really changed the minds, or at least created interest in a lot of elderly Americans, which I believe, yep, you know, at this point probably makes up a large percentage of the church. Do you think that there's medical marijuana use within the church?
There certainly is. I mean, there was a church in South Carolina, I can't recall a pastor now, but I recruited a lot simply by phone, cold phone calls. I mean, I did what you always do on a campaign. You start with people you know, and they give you names of other people, I reach out through those contacts. And I did that and spoke to one clergy person whom I hadn't known in a pillar congregation in Charleston, South Carolina, called the Circular Congregation. Wonderful guy. He was immediately supportive. He was delighted that I called. He tested. He went to Columbia and testified in support of medical marijuana. Why? I think he had his own personal experience, but he said there are people in this congregation for whom this, you know, makes it possible for them to endure severe pain. And so there, and it's interesting when you speak to the elderly, there are uses that I think they find that makes their suffering in some cases more bearable. So I think that broadens the base. But what really developed the momentum is simply individuals knowing others who had been helped by medical marijuana in cases of multiple sclerosis, in cases of especially nausea related to cancer. When medical marijuana passed in my own home state of Illinois, took us about 3 years to get there, to get the remaining 5 or 6 votes. And in each case, I think the vote we got and that we hadn't had was from someone who claimed to know somebody who in a very basic, important way had been helped by medical. In this case, my own state senator got up with tears in his eyes, said, I'm supporting this because the last days of my father's life dying from cancer would have been dramatically different if he'd had medical marijuana. It goes far beyond nausea, pains for cancer and multiple sclerosis. It has increasingly broad applicability, but all those instances that I've described could have been felt very much by individuals within congregations and were.
I'm curious how, as you have stated, from a religious perspective, do the issues of compassion and forgiveness enter into your advocacy for reforming drug policy? Some would argue that people who are addicted to or abusing drugs commit property crimes or worse. I'm just curious if you see drug addiction as primarily a health issue, and how important it is to create systems, opportunities for the addicted to find a way out of the cycles of abuse.
Yeah, it's absolutely a health issue. People are conflating two different things when they say that people ought to go to be prosecuted, arrested, punished through incarceration or at least a criminal penalty because they've harmed others, you know, stolen to property to pay for their drugs. If that's what is happening, they ought to be prosecuted for those crimes. But you don't prosecute somebody only for possession or use on the possibility that they might have harmed others. That's simply a conflation that is highly damaging and in my judgment, unjust and immoral. If I can't say it any other way. If folks are using drugs or possessing drugs, they are not harming others. And in fact, what I think the biggest single thing we miss in our society about drug use is that arresting somebody, criminalizing them, is an act of violence. My mentor, a man named William Sloan Coffin, who was a chaplain where I went to college, said, poverty is violence in slow motion. You know what? Arresting people is violence, not always so much in slow motion. You're ruining lives. You're taking away jobs. You're separating people from their family. If you give them a felony, you're making it impossible or almost impossible for them to get back on their feet. And if they're not harming others, why do we arrest them? And so that doesn't speak directly to compassion and forgiveness, except to say that we see parallels to what I've just said when you look at how Jesus responded to those in need, including those who were addicted. I'll bet a lot of the healing miracles that we read about in the Old Testament were people that might have suffered from some kind of addiction. And of course, that depends on how you define addiction, but I think the generalization applies. He didn't say get to jail and then come back and I'll make you better. He said, go and sin no more to the woman caught in adultery, which you might consider a sin or might consider an addiction, depending on why she was doing what she was doing. But he certainly didn't punish people in the first instance. He healed them. He showed them that God loved them. That's who and what he was. And so how to say that you ought to be punishing people for drug use is beyond my poor powers to comprehend. I would also say that the biblical passage, judge lest ye be judged, comes to bear here. Those who go around scapegoating people who are using drugs and possessing drugs, in many ways, I think, are a little bit worried at what they in their deepest level might be. And they want to isolate people so that they can verify their own goodness. I don't want to overextend that, but I think that's at work here. But the basic simple answer to your question is Jesus was one who brought compassion and forgiveness in his acts of healing and in his message more than anything else.
And of course, in our society, there's a lot of hypocrisy. It might just be that you're not doing the right drugs, right? Because our laws are selective. And I also want to point out Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He says it's easier to get over an addiction than it is a conviction because you can.
Oh, yes.
A conviction can be with you for life.
Well, he's one of the great pioneers in this whole area with law enforcement against prohibition originally and now for law enforcement for particular programs. Yeah, I'm a great admirer of his. So of course the notion that we define with any coherence what a drug is, that makes no sense. I always enjoy my debates with my Catholic friends who are against marijuana uses. They push back the second martini with me too.
Right.
I had newspaper exchanges in a kind of a point counterpoint way with a person who's actually a good friend in Illinois, one of the early heads of the Drug Enforcement Administration, who was vehemently opposed to medical marijuana, and then was passed in Illinois, opposed to legalizing marijuana, which has now happened in Illinois. And again, I'm sure he enjoyed his alcohol, and of course we can talk about cigarettes, which are far more lethal than marijuana, certainly, and probably other drugs that people would consider crimes. And some will say much harder to give up than heroin and other drugs. So there's no rationality about what a drug is now. It's evolved for a number of racial bias being no small part of that.
My guest is the Reverend Alexander Sharp. We're going to take another break and come back for our final questions.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Trends in technology, processes, and products. We cover these areas and more on The Cutting Edge of Cannabis. Be informed from the latest initiators of new innovation. Learn about the latest breakthroughs and best practices in the cannabis and hemp industries. Better products, better infrastructure, and better sustainability. The Cutting Edge of Cannabis. Consulted by the American Cannabis Company.
Oh, lady marijuana, llama tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Dazed and infused. Join sugar industry expert Latham Woodward for a happier hour each week for a lively and often hilarious discussion on the infusion of cannabis into food, beverages, and life. Explore exciting new culinary landscape trends with fascinating friends and guests who are leading the industry into the uncharted mainstream. Discover curated menus, enhanced cocktails, and live tastings. Life's a little sweeter here on Dazed and Infused.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
We're back for our final segment with Reverend Alexander Sharp. Al, we still have a couple minutes. I've got one question. I want to see if there's anything else that you would like to add that we haven't covered, but do you think that it's a human right to have the ability to change your consciousness? Albeit,
I do want to add one thing about the drug laws and the irrationality. As I'm sure you know, marijuana is right now a Schedule I drug of no accepted medical use, great danger for abuse. That means that marijuana is classified as equally dangerous with heroin, more dangerous than cocaine, and has no medical value. Let's just talk about the absurdity of that for an instance, for a moment, and how you can have a federal bureaucracy that won't yield that ridiculous classification. As far as a right to change one's consciousness, it's a human reality over 6,000, 8,000 years. So it doesn't even make much sense to talk about whether it's a right. But I think it is a right. If you define a right as John Stuart Mill did in his reference to the harm principle, the only possible reason to use force against a person in a civilized society is to prevent them from harming others, one has to say, in what ways does drug use harm others prima facie? It can harm kids, and you've got to keep it away from kids. It can harm people who are already addicts, and you should keep drugs away from addicts. But as a basic human right, I think the harm principle has served us pretty well, and it also reflects reality. Jess Sessions was absolutely wrong when he said all drug use is bad. I went through the fantasy of saying, well, if I were asked to testify in front of Jeff Sessions when he was the Attorney General, and what I would have said in response to him making that claim that all drug use is bad, I think what one would say is that we should be concerned not about we should be concerned about abuse, not use. I've never used marijuana. I don't have any particular interest, but I don't see anything wrong with using marijuana. What we should be concerned about, again, is not drug use, but about the abuse of drugs, because drugs are going to be used. They are in a reality in our society. And if we're so blind as to just say all drug use is wrong, we don't make the property distinction that enables us to focus on abuse. And I'd like to leave your listeners with a way of thinking about how to respond to drug use and abuse that actually stems out of my own university, the University of Chicago. Do I have time to complete this? Simply says that regulation and education are the right response, not prohibition. If you take things that are seen as vices, although I don't think drug use is necessarily a vice, but those things that are seen as vices because they give us pleasure, but they can bring harm, the right response is not to ban those vices, but to regulate them so you can control them, so you can do everything to fight abuse and keep people safe who are using them by limiting age, by making clear what it is that is actually being used. I find it highly amusing that people in our society say, well, marijuana isn't what our grandparents used. It's so much worse. Well, if that's the case, then regulate it. Don't ban it, because people are getting marijuana. So put it through a marketplace screen so that people know what they're using. So I would argue for abuse as the thing to be concerned about, not use.
Reverend Alexander Sharp from Clergy for a New Drug Policy, found at newdrugpolicy.org. Thank you so much for your important work. I've enjoyed this conversation, and thank you for being on HempResent.
My pleasure.
Now we're going to get to a weekly feature, HempResent on CannabisRadar.com. That's the quote of the week, and here it is. There can be little doubt about a role for cannabis in Judaic religion, and that is Carl Ruck, professor of classical mythology at Boston University, referencing the anointing oil used by Jesus and his disciples, said to contain an ingredient called cannabosum, which has since been identified as cannabis extract, according to an article by Chris Bennett in High Times magazine. That concludes this installment of HempResent on Cannabis Radio. I want to thank Brassica, my man in the control room, and all the Cannabis Radio sponsors and advertisers. Until then, my friends, when we're going to come back next week, stay strong, stand tall, take it easy. Turn up the music, maestro. I'm out.
Marijuana.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com.
Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.